Hello, friends. This is the beginning of the Blessed Ones webinar commentary number 5. We're in Esoteric Psychology number 2, volume 2, page 273. We have worked with the commentary on the first ray and the second ray, assuming that the Blessed Ones are monadic types, 7 monadic types which go forth into the cosmic, the dense physical body of the solar logos and planetary logos, anchoring themselves within the jewel in the lotus, or as the jewel in the lotus, or as the central fire on the higher mental plane, within the midst of the egoic lotus. Really, it's built around them, as far as I can understand. And then continuing their work in the lower three worlds, represented by the soul ray, but still affecting, impressing, driving that soul ray forward into expression. So the Blessed Ones express through the soul ray, but they are not the soul ray. They are the monad in expression. At least this is my theory at the present time. We have reached ray 3, and what I'll do is simply, I'll simply read it at first. The Blessed One gathered force. He hid himself behind a veil. He rolled himself within that veil and deeply hid his face. Naught could be seen but that which veiled, and active motion. Within the veil was latent thought. The thought reached forth. Behind this veil of Maya I stand, a Blessed One, but unrevealed. My energy is great, and through my mind I can display the glory of divinity. How can I, therefore, demonstrate this truth? What shall I do? I wander in illusion. The word went forth, all is illusion, O dweller in the shadows. Come forth into the light of day. Display the hidden glory of the Blessed One, the glory of the one and only. The glory and the truth will rapidly destroy that which has veiled the truth. The prisoner can go free. The rending of the blinding veil, the clear pronouncing of the truth, and practice right will render to the Blessed One that golden thread which will provide release from all the maze of earth existence. We do know that the third ray is deeply connected with that complexity in which we are all immersed in the lower worlds, called the maze. So the Blessed One gathered force. This is a the third ray is a ray of great energy, which works out as activity. So force is to be applied. Force is to be specifically applied. This is not so much energy, because it's going to be directed to a specific end. He hid himself behind a veil. And we might call this the veil of the lower 5 worlds, and especially the lower 3 worlds. All of the planes and the subplanes of these worlds are veiling the central reality, and that central reality is the monad itself, who is the Blessed One. But the Blessed One, of course, has gone forth. He has gone forth into the causal body. He is the central fire there. The causal body is as a great veil. Every extension of expression of that egoic lotus or causal body has the Blessed One behind it and, as it were, within it, because every aspect of consciousness is essentially the consciousness of the monad. This has been my assertion in all of these interpretations. So the veils are thicker in the three lower worlds, and also even the world of the spiritual triad will prove a veil, though less of a veil, and more giving more the possibility of expression for the monad. But the Blessed One who has gone forth and does not know himself as a Blessed One, but awakens to himself as the prodigal son, and then rises through the plains again until he realizes himself to be the Blessed One. This Blessed One has a long journey forward and in return, involutionary journey and evolutionary journey, before he realizes and can display his true nature as a Blessed One. So the first ray jiva, the first ray monad going forth, descended with rapidity, rupturing many ties. The second ray type built of the substances around him, built of the matter of the five lower planes, an ark or vehicles. And everything he touched was part of that magnetic structure gathered through magnetism called the ark. Now we have the idea of that which, because of its material nature or denser nature than that of the monad and its plane, serves as a veil to the monadic will, wisdom, and activity, to the monadic power, to the monadic nature. It is somewhat obscured by these substances of the lower five planes, remembering that the monad is on the sixth plane, or the second, counting down. Now he rolled himself within that veil. This is interesting because the third ray has for its type of motion rotary motion. So this is his method of gathering around him the substances of the lower five planes. The third ray method of gathering, the third ray monadic method of gathering substance is to roll, or is to promote rotary motion, and thus gather the vehicles and gather the substances through which to work. He rolled himself within that veil and deeply hid his face. This is the face of God, the monad, in a way. The face of God, the monad. His true nature could not be seen. It was obscured. His real identity, we might say, because the face reveals identity, and the veils obscure the face, or the true identity of the third ray monad. Naught could be seen but that which veiled. In other words, the real identity was obscured and could not be detected behind the veils. So only a substance of different kinds could be seen, and the true, what can we call, mover, could not be seen. But active motion in the veils could be seen because of the nature of the third ray monad. So we can say that active motion within the veils could be seen because of the powers. I want to call them in a way particular powers of the third ray monad. In other words, just as Fohat has the ability to produce vortexes, rotary motion, the torus, the rotating, verticular motion, so does the third ray monad. It's will, wisdom, and activity. The activity aspect is vorticular. And I think I'm going to make that a word that we'll use more often. So what the face of the monad was lost, and as we remember as well, this was the case for the second ray monad. We'll go over here. Deeply hid. Right. And the second ray monad built himself an ark, and he hid himself as well in the ark. And the first ray monad grounded himself deeply in the depths of form, and therefore was not released, and in a sense could not be seen because he was moving within the depths of form. The third ray monad is recognized only by the vorticular motion of the veils. So the fact that there is a life within and behind the veils is only noticed because of the vorticular motion of the veils. But this type of monad is endowed with the power to think, to come to terms with the substances which veil it, and to so arrange those substances that the archetype eventually is displayed. So this is a thought which has yet to be expressed, which is inherent in this type of monad. And it will be expressed. It is latent at the moment. This is a possession of the third ray monad. And so it has to unfold. So now we have the condition in which involutionarily the third ray monad has gone forth. It has its causal body. It takes the place, its place within the central fire. I think I have to mention that if there is a major monadic ray, we have to, and if that is perhaps on the logoic plane and is realized after the release of the volatile essence, we have to question, is that the influence that finds itself as the central fire in the jewel and the lotus, or is it the influence of its subray from the monadic plane which finds its place as the central fire in the jewel and the lotus? These two obviously can be different. Presuming that there is a major monadic ray and that it is recognized and known once the volatile essence is released from the Temple of Ezekiel, from the monadic body, that major monad may not be the one who sends forth its emanated representative. It may be, in fact, its subray. I suppose it's possible for there to be, for instance, a first ray major monad with a first ray subray on the monadic plane, or thinking along this line, a second ray major with a second sub and a third ray major with a third sub. I suppose that's possible, but the odds are that there will be a different subray. Every major monadic ray has seven subrays. So which is it that is within the jewel in the lotus, or is it some combination of the two? Anyway, the monad has gone forth as an emanation, and for the moment I'm assuming it's from the monadic plane. The prodigal son has left home. He's wandered into a far country. He's first, in a way, taken up his residence. He's taken up his residence within the egoic lotus, which has been built with the assistance of the solar angels, or at least sustained by them if built in a previous solar system. And the prodigal son has, as the soul in incarnation, which is really the monad in incarnation, gone forth even further into the distant country, into the lower planes, into the lower 18 subplanes. When the soul ray goes forth, and we say when the soul consciousness goes forth, it's really all the time at its core, the monadic consciousness, the attenuated monadic consciousness, the monad in extension. So now this is latent thought, and we can say now a turn has been made. All of these stanzas have a kind of second paragraph which represents a state after which a reorientation towards spirituality has been made. So let's just say that after these second paragraphs occur, after the prodigal son awakens to his fallen state and wishes to return first to the soul on the higher mental plane and thence to the monadic home. So the thought reached forth. Now he is in a position to think in a manner reorienting him to his truer homes, either on the higher mental plane or the really true home on the monadic level. Behind this veil of Maya I stand. In other words, let's just say, I am awakening to the myopic myopic conditions in which I live. I am surrounded by the energies of the lower planes and am therefore obscured in my true inner nature. So here I am in the midst of Maya. This the Maya, of course, can be the Maya of the etheric physical plane, but it can also be any of the lower 18 subplanes can, in a general sense, be considered the Maya. Behind this veil of Maya I stand, a blessed one. In other words, I am essentially the spiritual being, essentially the monad, but unrevealed through my surroundings, unrevealed through my surroundings. And obviously The desirable outcome would be to have a revealed monad walking through, passing through, living in the lower 18 subplanes, so that he would be recognized as revealing the monad. There comes a point where we're told, know, express, reveal, destroy, resurrect. Well, express the monad, DK tells us in chapter 14 of the Rays and the Initiation and Initiations, and reveal the monad, still a higher state. So that would be desirable. My energy is great. In other words, I have the energy which can move through activity many things. We'll just use the word things for, or let's say, many other energies and forces combined and uncombined. Because when we talk about things, really, we're talking about stabilized combinations of energies, or temporarily stabilized combinations of energy. My energy is great. And through my mind, which is the third ray monad's greatest capacity, capacity of the third ray monad. Remember that all the monads have will, wisdom, and activity, but there is an accentuation depending on the monadic ray. And the three major centers, head, heart, and throat, find the monad anchored in one or the other. The third ray monad will anchor among these three in the throat, the second ray monad in the heart, and the first ray monad in the head. This is what I've gathered from Cosmic Fire, though, you know, trying to find the needle in the haystack, one can go looking, but that is the idea. I can, and through my mind, my greatest asset, we can say, I can display the glory of divinity. I can reveal how the divine power, the divine powers, shine inwardly. My mind shows how all was made, how all these combinations were made, and the great and glorious force, put a capital there, which made them. We all suspect when we look at the creation, you know, the third aspect in a way, there must be a glorious being, a glorious mind, radiant with light, effulgent, behind this construction. How could it be constructed? How could it be created? I can also arrange, let us say, the energies and forces so that light shines through the form. And the fifth ray can do this as well. I can arrange the energies and forces so that the great light shines through the form. It's a question of right relationship. Right arrangement will allow translucence and eventually transparency. But things have to be put in their proper relations with each other. And this requires constant the constant activity of rearrangement is required in order to make that possible. So that's how he can display. In other words, I can demonstrate the presence of the higher mind, the great light of mind, shining in brilliance. And I can prove it, you know, in a way, or I can at least attempt to prove the existence of divine mind and its brilliance, its luminescence. How can I therefore demonstrate this truth, especially when veiled, when handicapped by the veils. I know what is in me. See, I know the light within me, the glory of the divine mind within me. But I do not know the method of demonstrating this through the Maya in which I am enwrapped, veiled, we might say. I do not know the method by which I can, I'm so encumbered, I'm so enveloped that I cannot demonstrate the inner glory which I recognize as existent, which I intuit. So what shall I do? I wander in illusion. I wander in that which prevents the inner truth from being revealed, which distorts the inner truth. And what shall I do? You know, because we all reach a point of incapacity, we have a destination. We have a destination, we see the destination, but we do not know the means or all the means or sufficient means of reaching that destination. So in a way, we appeal to the solar angel or to that higher aspect of ourselves, which we call the spirit. Because the monad, having come forth as an emanation, has lost in that process some of the knowledge which it had on the highest planes. I mean, all of us are the monad in expression right here in the personality, and there's so much we don't know. We are the one, we are the monad in expression. But we have forgotten what we know on the very highest planes. So what are we then to do? So we have to appeal to a source of knowledge, or we say that because we have forgotten in our descent that which we knew on the higher planes, we have to appeal to that part of ourselves which still knows, or to the solar angel, which is a high being and certainly knows. It's even, in a way, like an appeal to the planetary logos of which the monad is an aspect. So the word went forth, and we can say, from a high and knowing source, whether the soul, solar angel, the monad, the planetary logos, something that knows, the word goes forth, all is illusion, O dweller in the shadows. Now, this is quite a statement. All is illusion. Does he really mean the universal all? Is the universal all really meant? Because in a way, that is true. The very universe itself is illusion when compared to the absolute reality. It is, in a way, an infinitesimal revelation of the absolute reality. But here the Blessed One is awakening to his plight, probably within the three worlds, because there the illusion is the most dense. So we can say within the three lower worlds, the illusion is most dense. And of course, the cosmic physical plane itself, of the cosmic planes, is the plane of illusion. So as DK has told us, that not until the ninth initiation, a number interesting in its relation to three, not until the ninth initiation is the illusion overcome, and that would be, in my view, simply the illusion of the cosmic physical plane, which in the cosmic sense is the most dense. So at least all is illusion, or, you know, from the practical point of view, from the planes whereon you call forth, all is indeed illusion. Or in other words, where you are, all is illusion. And to a certain extent, on every aspect of the cosmic physical plane, all is illusion, but that is not going to be a concern of the one who seeks to return, because then even the monad is an aspect of illusion. Okay. So it is kind of a general statement that all is illusion, but if you want to take it literally, this is a universal truth, and it's certainly true of the worlds from which the cry is going forth, or the demand, or the call is going forth. And it is also, from a practical point of view, of the rising monad, true of the cosmic physical plane, and yet this monad is seeking to come into its own, come back to itself, which is in the world of higher illusion, which would not, from this perspective, be considered an illusion at all. So the word went forth from the one who knows, all is illusion, O dweller in the shadows. And so especially these shadows, from the monadic point of view, would be the five lower planes of human and superhuman evolution. The shadows are the veils of Brahma, we might say, and at least from a relative sense, on the monadic plane, we will not consider that state illusory, though in a fundamental sense it is, but not relative to the awakening monad striving for home. Home may be a high illusory state, but not to the one who seeks to get there. So come forth into the light of day. So in a way, you know, it said, unwrap yourself. Unwrap yourself. And the light of day, let's see. Well, I think that would be a good one to make a light of day. So we'll light of day. Yeah. All right. So the light of day, in a way, is, in a way, on the cosmic etheric planes. So certainly rise into the cosmic ethers. Rise that far. Because you are in the very densest world. So at least rise up via the Antikarana. Rise up via the Antikarana. The Antikarana making possible the, what we can call, return of the monad. Rise up into a realm of lesser illusion, which is the four cosmic etheric planes. At least establish contact with that. At least establish contact with those planes. Display the hidden glory of the Blessed One, the glory of the one and only. Now, here's a really such an important sentence, because we can say, you know, the universal monad is the one and only. And so there is an equivalence of the Blessed One and the one and only. The Blessed One is the universal monad in an attenuated and apparently divided, emanatively divided form, in an emanatively divided form. Emanatively divided. Right, so now rise into a lesser condition of a condition of lesser veiling. That's what we have to do. The advice is rise into a condition of lesser veiling. And the means are going to be given. And if you can do so, the glory and the truth, the glory of your inner brilliance and radiance, and the truth which your mind can display, will rapidly destroy. So it's almost as if so increase your point of tension until you can radiate your inner glory and brilliance. So intensify your inner qualities and attempt to shine them through the veils. The glory and the truth will rapidly destroy that which has veiled the truth. The outer illusion will fade away in the presence of the glory and truth you can reveal. The outer illusion will fade away in the presence of yeah, that's a good one too. So, in the presence of, right, in the presence of, so the veiling powers, which are the lesser combinations, the lesser energies, will realign. The lesser energies due to their opaque relationships will realign when you intensify the radiation of your inner powers. And their veiling power will give way. And instead, they will be realigned so that your powers can be revealed through them. So, you know, this is what we call the refinement of the vehicles, the reconfiguration, the reconfiguration of the constituents of the vehicles, done through intelligence in this case, done through intelligence in this case. The prisoner can go free, and the prisoner is the Blessed One. This is the Blessed One. This is the Blessed One who cannot show or demonstrate his nature or be seen for what he is. Now comes the techniques by which this can be accomplished. Well, you have to, you know, you have to come forth into the light of day, display the hidden glory of the Blessed One. This you can do through self-intensification. And I'm going to say that up here. Display the hidden glory of the Blessed One. This is done through what I would call self-intensification, increasing the focus on being that Blessed One and not being veiled by the veils. All of us can do this if we will. We concentrate upon what we are inwardly, so much so that we become positive to the circumstances which obscured us. Okay. Now, let's go on and look at the methods here. The prisoner can go free. The rending of the blinding veil. It reminds us of chapter 10, with rule 10 and the rays and the initiations, that Christ rent the veils of illusion, or the veils of Maya, from top to the bottom. So a cutting through is needed. And of course, how will that be done? This is kind of an ultimate result here if we clearly pronounce the truth. The rending of the blinding veil, I would say, as a result of the clear pronouncing of the truth, as we know, the third ray type is capable of what we call fabrication, or building in such a way that which is built is not in line with the truth. So, you know, well, a fabrication also simply means to create, but the connotation of the word fabrication, when you say, oh, well, that's a fabrication, that's something you just made up, it has no connection with the truth. So instead of just loving your own thoughts and loving your ideas and your wild activity, as we are told about in the integration formula for the third ray, there is the love of truth. And through the throat center and in the mind, the truth is clearly pronounced, so that whatever is created is in direct alignment with what is. And practice right. So one is on the level of mind, the clear pronouncing of the truth, mind and voice. And practice right has to do, this relates to the type of activity which must cease from being what's called wild activity, based on impulse and desire, rather than on plan and purpose. So, and practice right. So we know from observing people in whom the third ray is strong that they have difficulty repeating in a systematic way orderly patterns which work and which help to bring through a higher pattern, so a lower pattern of behavior which should be resonant with or reflective of a higher pattern of plan and purpose. They have difficulty with this because they operate on impulse and they do not like orderly motion. So we need here repetitive, correct actions which will allow higher patterns of energy to manifest. My experience has been that the seventh ray people, strong seventh ray, are the ones that carry on their meditation every day and can be relied upon to proceed with regularity, to do the right thing, whereas there's a certain unpredictability with the third ray type. They may degenerate into wild activity, doing things on impulse when they wish to do them, and difficulty achieving regularity, one might say, and this has to be overcome. So the difficulty of achieving regularity must be overcome somehow. We'll render. So if we rend, and these two things, I think, well, the rending of the blinding veil, cutting through is needed. Now, you know, how do you do this? And I would say the acute energy of divine mental perception, that was my hope, right? Mental perception. I'll just say it. The acute energy of divine mental perception can see through, burn through the veils and lead to their disintegration. So we can see through that which veils the truth, thus weakening the veils so that they can easily be rent. You know, you could almost imagine with an I-beam you could kind of do this, a laser-like approach to the obscuring energies. And the power, the acute power of mind can do this, I want to say. The acute power of mind can do the rending. But also, of course, in terms of manifestation, when you clearly pronounce the truth, you destroy the veils of Maya. And when you when you do the right kind of practice as well, you reconstitute all of the energies around you so they are no longer inhibitory of the truth. Either the truth getting through to you or you getting through to the truth. So there are certain physical things with the voice and with the hands and with the body that one must do in order to reconfigure the energies that you are surrounded with so they are no longer, because of their misalignment, considered to be veils. And I'm just thinking, you know, sometimes Saturn with its scythe, although it's a third ray planet, has some first ray, you can imagine that that scythe can be used to rend the veils. And I'm going to just say that. The scythe of Saturn can be used to cut or rend the veils. And Saturn has so much to do with truth and exactitude. So exactitude of thought, as it's called. I'm remembering that Annie Besant talked about the third and the fifth ray, contrasting them, and with the third ray we had exactitude of thought, and with the fifth ray we had exactitude of action. Because the fifth ray is very much an applied ray, intelligent application of thought in matter, so that the matter is rightly arranged to reveal power. And that's the fifth ray's connection with the first ray. You know, look at what technology has done for us when the material factors are brought into right and stable relationship with each other. We produce lasers, we produce rockets, we produce these particle generators, and all of this is because we know how to intelligently arrange matter for certain purposes. So, and the important thing here is that we stop weaving the veils. We must stop weaving the veils of illusion. Okay, I'm going to just make that VO, and we'll just say veils of illusion. Veils of illusion. Okay, because the problem is surrounded by a multitude of threads and buried in folds and folds of woven goods, the weaver sits. The weaver can continually reinforce the veils, and when there is a rent appearing in the veils because of truth, because of the ability to see and discern through and beyond the veils, wrong activity by the weaver can patch them up. There was a shop in one of my old towns that I lived in. It was called the Reweave Shop. So if somehow you had worn out a fabric, maybe something that you were wearing and it was ripping and tearing, you could take it and it would be rewoven in a way that was barely discernible. Well, we don't want to reweave the rent veils of Maya. So we have to avoid reweaving the rent veils of Maya. And if we use the scythe or sword of discrimination, because in a way, the third ray is the divine separator, separating truth from falsehood, we can keep the rent in the veils, and this will lead to their disintegration. Yes, so we have to use that sword of truth, that scythe which discriminates and separates truth from falsehood. We can see through and into the mistaken combinations which the veils represent. We can so arrange the veils that arrangement is archetypal rather than a mishmash caused by the impulse of desire. So we're going to subject our relationship to energy to the truth, the clear pronouncing of the truth. And we're going to do those things which reflect the patterns in heaven and not the patterns which desire wants to see woven. So we do those things which in an orderly way reflect the patterns in heaven. And then when we do that, we will no longer be blinded. We will be surrounded by truth, and the truth will help us arrange all things correctly, archetypally. Our actions will help us arrange all things correctly, archetypally. We will be given, we'll render to the Blessed One that golden thread of truth, not the many, many lines along which we have built and speculated over the years, but the single line, the golden thread of truth, Ariadne's thread as it's called, which will lead us out of the maze, which will provide release from all the maze of earth existence, if we follow it. Perhaps a truth which is true under all circumstances, and which we can use as a kind of touchstone in all circumstances. In other words, we have a golden thread. This is always true. And we can use this this golden thread to discern the way to go in all circumstances. So maybe for each person it's a different thing, but what is the golden thread of truth to you? What do you use as your touchstone to decide when you seem bewildered? Well, there are, from the moon chain, quite a number of the third ray monads here, and many of the more advanced human beings, and I suppose students of occultism and of the spiritual path, are those third ray monads, maybe in an ultimate sense, but, you know, the major monads, one, two, or three, I don't know about the one through seven subtypes, whether there's any law about how many of those subtypes there would be. I think we'd be talking about the major monadic ray. But anyhow, we are bewildered and we don't know which way to turn. But at every possible turn, at each turn a man must face himself, at every possible turn when you could either move towards freedom and extrication from your own self-built maze or the maze of the world, you hold up the golden thread of truth, and that truth will be the guide in which way to turn. Always in mazes, you have possibilities of turning, and maybe more than two ways. Maybe you come into a possibility where several doors or passages confront you. What shall be the glow of the golden thread of truth can lead you to the right path. The glow of the golden thread of truth can lead to the right path. So what is your thread? You know, and of course, from another point of view, it's simply the building of the Antikorana. Look up along the line and not along the many lines. Let's see, how does that go exactly? Look up along the line, which in the space of eons you have woven, yes. Look up along the line. And this is in the integration formula. Look up along the line and not along the many lines which in the space of eons you have woven. The one line. The one line is the golden line. And I have to understand along the line and not along the many lines. So let's see if I can get this. Here it is. Look up along the line and not along the many lines which in the space of eons you have woven. This is the moment when the many have to be resolved into the one, the principle, that which is reliable under all circumstances, and that the monad is truth, and that is truth, and that which will lead to the monad is the one golden thread. So we always have to consult the inner organ called the Antikorana in all circumstances, and the truth, the method, the choice, the way, the truth, method, choice, or way will descend as light along the Antikorana. But always use it. In every circumstance, you know, what shall I do? This is a maze. Well, we look within, we use the Antikorana, and the higher light will descend into the circumstance and reveal to us the way that we should go. So I would just like to read this one more time. And I'll find it here. From all the maze, okay. because without the interruption of interpretation, it can make its impact. So the Ray 3 stanza for the Blessed One, for the monad in extension, for the monad in attenuation, for ourselves as the monad who has gone forth as the prodigal son and is reawakening to itself as the potential Blessed One and seeks to know the way to go. Ray 3. The Blessed One gathered force. He hid himself behind a veil. He rolled himself within that veil and deeply hid his face. Naught could be seen but that which veiled and active motion. Within the veil was latent thought. The thought reached forth. Behind this veil of Maya I stand, a Blessed One, but unrevealed. My energy is great, and through my mind I can display the glory of divinity. How can I therefore demonstrate this truth? What shall I do? I wander in illusion. The word went forth, all is illusion, O dweller in the shadows. Come forth into the light of day. Display the hidden glory of the Blessed One, the glory of the one and only. The glory and the truth will rapidly destroy that which has veiled the truth. The prisoner can go free. The rending of the blinding veil, the clear pronouncing of the truth, and practice right will render to the Blessed One that golden thread which will provide release from all the maze of earth existence. See, if we do these things, we will be given the access to the Antikarana by which we can ascend and know by the descent of the higher energy and the higher light, the higher wisdom, the higher love, what really is the truth and which way we must go. The whole first paragraph is involutionary, and the second paragraph is evolutionary. And that is the general pattern in these stanzas. So somehow the monad in extension returns to itself and becomes the self-realized, the Blessed One on his way home until there reaches such a state of true beatitude and blessedness developing when the monad comes back entirely into its own and the Chohan emerges, the six-degree initiate emerges with no further need except under special circumstances to descend into the five lower worlds, even as the initiate of the fourth degree need no longer descend into the three lower worlds except under special circumstances. Okay, well, I hope that gives the sense of it. We could ponder over every sentence. We could do that in group form, and more would emerge, of course. So this is the end of the Blessed One's webinar commentaries number 5. And we're not making a whole lot of it. It's not a question of pages, is it? Because we're still on page 37. Esoteric Psychology 2, page 37, and beginning of beginning of a Blessed One's webinar commentaries 6, Esoteric Psychology 2, page 37, and we'll be back and bring some thought to the fourth ray stanza. Okay, see you soon.